I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum bum bum.
Right then, fellas, another episode, new artwork. Happy December. Tinners, how are we doing, mate?
Not bad, mate. Not bad at all. Being a busy week, cold week up north, but all good. All good. Good to start December. And hopefully coming out of lockdown into a decent tier. Well, tier three start, and hopefully getting a good one. Since I've seen the stats today, it looks like we're going pretty well.
Right,
so
tier,
not too bad.
Canny tier.
What about you, Jim?
Surprised that we got to episode number two. I never thought we'd make it this far. Don't know about you, Tee. I ran out of pattern last week.
Well, I hope you haven't peaked too early, Jimmy, because hopefully we're in this for the long haul. But we are in December. We are coming out of lockdown. One thing that's also finished has obviously been that Movember month that's been going on. A brilliant cause. For me personally, I've been able to run. Today I've rested my legs. I did my Movember. I'll be getting rid of the moustache soon. But hopefully with the awareness that's been raised from a lot of people doing a lot of good work and raising a lot of money, working incredibly hard with a lot of brilliant charities, those conversations don't stop just because the moustaches have gone. So those people that do feel the need to reach out, whether that's to ourselves, whether that's to family, friends, whether that's to anonymous individuals working for the charities, please make sure that you do, especially in these tough times, as you say, Tinners, with the tears. People, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of job insecurity coming into Christmas, people potentially spending it alone. Those charities that do that incredible work are there to support all of those peoples that feel like they need the support to get through these times. But that being said, shall we get straight into the headlines? Tinners, I'm going to come to you first this week.
First of all, before that, how far did you run?
Go on then, Jimmy. I set myself the goal. We went with Movember. I thought I'd look a little bit silly for a month with the handlebars, the Hulk Hogan. But I thought I'd physically be active. I'd try and run. I wanted to run 5 kilometres a day. I did a little bit more. So I did a few 10Ks and I managed to do a half marathon in there. So I ended up doing just short of 230 kilometres across the month, which was a good effort, I think. I know some people have ran an awful lot further, which is an incredible effort. But for me personally, I was delighted to rest my legs today. But obviously certain people, they can't necessarily stop their own challenges, those personal battles. They don't just end because the moustache is gone. But hopefully in the future, some more running, plenty of awareness raised and lots of lives saved. But Tinners, you're first. What's next?
Right, well, this week I've gone down the cricket route. I saw, obviously, with the international 2020s going on between England and South Africa, I saw a quote from the BBC about Owen Morgan. Basically, Owen Morgan said he does not know his best 2020 side yet. Obviously, they've played three against South Africa now. As we've come on there, they've just beat them for the third game. And my kind of, what I wanted to go into is it the best team that they're playing at the minute? And kind of how far can England get in the 2020 World Cup when it comes around? Obviously, they won the World Cup last year with the 50-over competition. They'll be looking to push for this one as well. So it's a case of what's the best team? Are they playing the best cricket at the minute? And go from there, really, obviously, with the different the different surfaces that are going to play on the World Cup compared to what they play on in England and in South Africa currently. Will that play a big factor in the team they're selecting now compared to the team that they'll select in the World Cup?
Well, that's starting, obviously, a couple of points there that you've made, which, as you say, we've just watched them go 3-0 up against South Africa. I'm not sure South Africa are a bad preparation for a World Cup, but obviously we're still a little while out. Before we talk about 11s, are England the favourites to go into the World Cup? I see Michael Vaughan's just made a tweet there saying that whoever beats them at the World Cup will win it.
Favourites? Oh, you can't look too far past India and Australia all the time. I suppose all three with being the big nations, but then you can't kind of take New Zealand out of it because they always do well in World Cup competitions. I suppose India, and where the World Cup's going to be, do they then become favourites? Or does the way that England play their cricket kind of outrank everyone else? I mean, you look at the amount of England lads who are in the IPL compared to the amount of kind of South African lads that were there. I suppose it kind of weighs it up a little bit with, are England favourites? They're certainly up there for me. I wouldn't say they're the favourites. I think India are the favourites, but I think England are certainly one of three.
Do you think this year, with the increased number of England players that went across to the IPL, even though it was in Dubai, was an opportunity, was a chance to get those players that 2020 experience, seeing a lot of those international superstars? The ECB have always had this slight stance, and I know KP brings it up all the time when he says he was never allowed to go, look how many players are there now, etc., etc. Do you think that was with one eye on the World Cup, let these boys go, sit alongside some superstars, play against them, and hopefully give them more preparation, better preparation to come home as world champions once again?
I think that was certainly one of the reasons. Obviously, there's not an awful lot of cricket going on at the minute as well, but it's one of those things of, well, why not? You might as well go and play some cricket, and it's going to be in similar conditions to what it's going to be in the World Cup. It's not going to be exactly the same, but you get to see what the other teams, the other national teams' best players are like and what they're going to do and how they're going to play out there. And I suppose they're going to be speaking with some of the other best cricketers in the world, speaking of the likes of Kohli and Rahul, the keeper, and figure out how he plays and talk to him and get a bit of advice of him in that team, which then takes it back to the England team and say, look, Virat says he does this, this and this. This is what we should do. When we go over, or taking snippets from the best players in the world, like Kohli, and using that to England's advantage. And like I said, KP was all for it. And I think the ECB have done the right thing in allowing our best players to go over, because it's only going to make them better. It's not going to make them worse.
I'd love it if Kohli was the double bluff them. I kind of play the ball that's in the slot outside off stump.
Nobody likes a wide half volley on the subcontinent.
Where do you want your first ball to be? A low full toss outside off with no man out to keep cover.
I think it's an interesting point, isn't it? That they've obviously all got across, and England, they've got a year to prepare. They've got a lot of cricket to be played before then. They've obviously got the introduction through the summer of the 100. And I just wonder whether that's going to actually hamper their chances. They're going to want to get these players playing. They want to build the profile of the sport. They're going to hopefully by that point have crowds in to boost the support and participation around this. I would be all guns blazing 2020 cricket. Send them all off to the Big Bash. Send them over to Pakistan. Send them over to Nepal. Whatever Big Bash league is going on, bring them back. Do the T20 blast properly. And then you go to a World Cup fully cooked.
Yeah, I think it's been timed pretty badly, hasn't it? I suppose everything that's gone on, you can't really blame them. But the 100 is a completely different competition, and that's not what they're going to play in the World Cup. So all England's best players are going to go, that should be playing in the Blast 2020 competition. They're going to be playing in the 100 and playing a different format, and then they're all going to fly into the World Cup slightly undercooked of 2020 cricket. I suppose they can play international cricket leading up to it, but the whole point of the 100 was to have the biggest names playing, I suppose. So it'll be interesting to see how the lads go in the 100 and then transfer straight into the 2020 World Cup, how many games they'll need in between that, with actual 2020 cricket. I think they'll probably be more than normal.
I think a World Cup's always one of those things, and it's hard to say a year out who's a favourite, etc. So I guess the discussion point, as you say, Morgan's struggling with it. Shall we try and play the role of selectors? What do you think in terms of an 11 out on the pitch? What's England's best 11 to potentially win that World Cup?
Now or based on... Because if you're basing it on current form, Jason Roy probably doesn't make it. But if you were to say to me, going into that World Cup next year, does Jason Roy start? You'd probably say yes, because you assume that in that time he will find a bit of form.
But Jimmy, if you were to tell me that Jason Roy was going to score 10 T20 hundreds in a row before the World Cup, of course he's going to play. That's not how it works, is it?
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, Andy.
I guess you've got to take it into account. You've got to realise, I think he's probably right now the big discussion point for England. I think he has got a little bit of England golden boy about him. I think they accommodated him to get him into the Ashes. I think they gave him a run in the World Cup. He obviously was part of that World Cup winning side, having been injured and came back in. He had a shocking summer over here against Ireland and Australia in England in the COVID 2020 times. And then he's gone across to South Africa to play in these 2020s. Hasn't done brilliantly. He hasn't scored a white ball international 50 since the World Cup.
Do you think his confidence was shattered by how big of a failure he was in Red Bull cricket for England? Do you think it was almost like he was a little bit... He was obviously a player that worked off confidence. He was Billy Big Bollocks, strutting out in the World Cup, absolutely smoking it. Everyone saying him and Bairstow are the most destructive opening partners. He needs to play Red Bull cricket. Everyone blowing smoke up his arse. And then all of a sudden, he got found out by Australia with a moving Red Bull where their bowlers were, I think, arguably outperformed what everyone's expectations of them were going to be. And do you not just think his confidence has suffered a little bit from there? And I don't know what he's done for Surrey, but certainly on the international stage, he hasn't performed since then. I just wonder if he's taken a bit of a confidence hit with his failures in Red Bull.
The worst thing Jason Roy ever did was leave Slazenger.
Get in. Other cricket brands also available.
No, I think it's tricky. I think it's hard. I think you can't look past his stats. You can't look past what they've done. Even in the 2020s, this series, they've moved people around. They've dropped Bairstow down to four. Banton's just carrying drinks again. Jason Roy's got a top score of 24 in the last however long. He can't play left arm spin. He's the new KP. He's getting dismissed every 15 balls.
That's worst titles to have, man. The new KP.
He's one of Surrey's pretty boys who have a reputation for God knows what else, along with being able to hit a long ball, and maybe has just got other interests than that
do
now.
Do you think we can now create a cricketing sort of analogy that's a little bit like the follow round in football? Could he do it on a cold, wet, windy night at Stoke? I'd like to see him do it on a cold, windy night up at the Riverside. Could he do it at Durham on a cold, windy night, back against Marcus?
And a massive ground. Yeah.
A massive ground. You've got the trapdoor stand on one side. It's a long walk back to the pavilion if you don't make it. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he probably did take a bit of a chaperone when he realised that Test cricket against the Aussies was pretty difficult compared to standing on your front foot and belting it. And he is, on his day, as destructive as anyone has been in a few years. I think it gets to the point that Tom Banton is an unbelievable talent. At what point do you say to Jason Roy, right, you failed. We need to give Tom Banton a good run at this. If he fails, then the next person back in is you because you've done so well, but you need a break and we need to let Tom have a go. And if he's not quite good enough yet, he's not quite good enough yet. But at the same time, he went over to the Big Bash last year and took the mick, really, when you watch some of the stuff he does. And Jason Roy's going back this winter, and hopefully that'll get him back into form. It might do, it might not, but at the end of the day, Banton went that year before and smashed it all over. So Roy's kind of, I suppose, against a couple of other people as well. It's not just, like say, Johnny Bairstow's being put down to four. It's not the point that, well, Johnny does it in the IPL, belts it at the top of the order, so why not keep him?
The problem England have at the minute is it's a top order issue because they've got so many good players. They've got so many good batters, even at the top of the order, but if you're putting Bairstow, Morgan, Stokes in the middle order. You've got Milan as the best 2020 player in the world, batter at the moment. At the top of the order, you're picking to bat alongside Butler, Roy, Banton. Neither of them are playing a huge amount of cricket at the moment, so neither of them have particular form. So when they come in, they are swinging and hoping that they potentially come off. That's what we've seen with Roy. Banton's carried drinks all of the IPL. He missed that Bob Willis final for Somerset. He pissed off everyone with his red ball cricket. He's made it quite clear he wants to be a white ball cricketer. He will be for a very long time, but he needs to be playing cricket. And I think the Big Bash this year is going to be a massive telling point that by the time it gets round to end of January, the end of the Big Bash, England will know what 11 they want to go with, and that will be what's played. So that first 11 that they pick, that first 2020 post-Big Bash, once they've all been out there, and Livingston's been out there and Vince has tried to put his name in the hat and Phil Salt's been out there to try and put his name in the hat. The first lineup they pick post that will be what their lineup will be that first World Cup 2020 game. And if Roy and Banton have a decent Big Bash, they'll be in the driving seat. At the minute, no one's got the shirt.
Can't wait for Milan to be the first player to be dropped. No more on test player, first out. Sean Dyche gave a quote. Well, I read this about Newcastle United, off topic, but it's coming back to it somehow. Give me a chance. All the pieces are there. Someone else put them together. Sean Dyche was talking about Jeff Hendrick, and he said he somehow always manages to get his name on the team sheet. And I've got a feeling Joe Root's going to manage to do that. You talk about all these big hitters. I think Joe Root's going to sneak in and get himself a number three berth, and it'll be the excuse of, Well, if you get a quick wicket, there's no but better another player.
He's not playing cricket. He's not playing cricket. It's all very well saying, get him in, get him playing. He's not playing cricket. I tell you the one person who is a destructive top-order batter, who is English, who has an international record, that is playing cricket at the minute, Alex Hales. Get him in.
Look, you've got to forgive and forget.
Board of tons now. Get him in.
Get in.
Well, he just goes and plays cricket wherever he gets asked to go and play, doesn't he? Because he's trying to prove
But he's
point
playing cricket. Yeah. But he is playing cricket and he's doing well and he scores runs. He's obviously got his past. He's obviously had his issues. I don't know. Morgan has made the tough calls in the past. One of them was saying Hales has been exiled. One of them was dropping Plunkett straight after winning a World Cup. He's not afraid to make a hard decision. And that's one of his big credits as captain. But I'm not going to hold it against Owen Morgan if he goes, you know what, we're struggling at the top of the order and there's a lad who's just gone and scored X number of runs in five different 2020 franchise leagues across the road, around the world, sorry, because we haven't got anyone who's been doing that. No one's putting their hand up bar Alex Hales. And you know what? Get him in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. But I mean, at what point do you just say that Alex Hales, right, you're the one that's playing cricket. Let's get you back in.
I think it would take too much. I think while Morgan is captain of that side, and he'll only be captain until the World Cup, and then he'll probably be gone, to be fair. And he wants to go out doing the double, which I think he's got a brilliant chance of doing. I don't see him going back on that, however much sway potentially Stokes has on him as his mate, as his tag team partner from Bristol.
I like that.
Yeah.
I really like that. Can you see tag team?
But if we're saying that, and Hales is a long shot, and I'd love to see him in, but whatever. I
could be the Jeff and Matt Hardy of the Crickling Wheel. There's another sports plug. We're done for another week. Get in.
I think there are seven definite undroppables in that England
you
team.
Are. All right, well, at the moment. Here you go. I'll read my 11 out. I've got. See how many of them I've dropped.
Okay, out of my seven. All right. So this is your 11. This is the first world.
This is my 11 for the World Cup first game in a year's time. So I'm thinking about where it is, give it a year, all of that. I'm not just saying this is who I'd pick tomorrow. This is who I'd pick.
Can I ask a question, which is a bad question to ask 15 minutes into this debate? Where is the World Cup being played? I haven't got a clue. I thought it was Australia, and you've been sat talking about India for the last God knows how long.
It's in India,
right,
Jimmy.
Cheers, Andy.
That changes everything.
Well, we'll play 2 minutes now. Roy out. Ali in.
I can't believe I've been defending for so long. Right, I've got my seven undroppables. Right. Let's see how many are in your team, Tinnis.
I've put Johnny Bairstow over at the top. With Banton, I'm going straight with Banton. I'm dropping Roy. Malan, 3. I don't think you can drop him. Butler, 4. Stokes, 5. Morgan, 6. Mornally, 7. Archer, Jordan, Wood, Adil Rashid. That's my 11.
Right. I've got... Yeah. My 7 are in there.
Yeah. So who are your 7? Who are the 7 go-tos?
Now, I've got a massive batting order TBC, but I'm going to go on the spot right now. My batting order is Butler, Bairstow, 2 of my undroppables, Milan at 3, Morgan at 4, Stokes at 5, my 5 undroppables. I'm getting in there straight away. I've got someone to put in at 6, and then I'm going... in whatever order they want. Archer, Jordan, Rashid, 2 Curran.
2 Currans.
And my one to fit in, Moeen Ali gets nowhere near. I don't care where you're playing, he is shot at international cricket.
I just think if you're playing over there, you've got half a chance of him just sneaking a great World Cup and then packing in with Morgan and saying, happy days, I've won 2 World Cups, I've played out my skin in the 2020 World Cup in a decent place for him to play his cricket and flying. I mean, I have got Sam Curran slash Ali, but I'm picking Ali purely on where it's based. I've got Sam Curran in there at seven as your all-rounder. I know Stokes is the all-rounder, but he doesn't bowl a lot in 2020 cricket. So I think Sam Curran can go the journey sometimes, but he can also win games as well with the bat. So
I've gone the two Currans, and I've given them the nod on the basis of their variations, along with Jordan, who's obviously just become England's 2020 wicket-taker record holder. Rashid's going to bowl you four overs for not many. He's just gone past Swan, and he is quality as a leg spinner in white ball cricket. The two Currans have both been out there in the IPL showing off their skills. So they've got experience in that environment. And I think they just offer those slow balls, those cutters, enough that you can potentially get away with having one spinner. Now, you're going to have to take another person in the squad. But I think that middle position that you are arguing for, you're playing for one spot. And it could be a top of the order if you don't want Bairstow up there. And that could be Jason Roy back in. It could be Banton in there. It could be Livingston, who's going out to the Big Bash. He's out in Perth. It could be Sam Billings, who's over at Sydney at the Thunder. Phil Salts with the strikers. James Vince isn't playing cricket for me. And for me, Moeen Ali's not out there. But Roy probably hasn't done enough lately to start in the World Cup.
You've just argued for 5 minutes for Alex Hales and then you've not picked one.
Yeah, Alex Hales isn't getting in. He would be.
Stop the count.
But
stop
for my ideal
count.
Team... my ideal team, I'm bringing back KP. No. I think in that middle order, it wouldn't surprise me. If I'm saying that Jason Roy's England's golden boy, Sam Billings is there. He has got some dirt on the selectors because he has been in every single squad to get a chance and hasn't been there. Liam Dawson can't play in a World Cup game.
I watched him in that ODI against Australia and he was absolutely dynamite. And to be honest, he's absolutely changed my perception on him now. I think he's God's gift to the planet. I can't really understand why he's not getting
Was that in a losing cause? Was that in a losing cause?
Yeah, well, it was, but I think that makes it even better. It's everyone's dream to score 100 in a losing cause.
Done in a losing cause.
Who doesn't set out a Saturday hoping for a ton and a team defeat?
The Holy Grail, a ton in a losing cause against Australia.
Ton in a defeat, circuit, chop, circuit. Ton in a losing defeat on the Sunday.
Your bowling attack's going to be Archer. He's world class. He's the IPL bowler of the tournament, player of the tournament. Jordan's in there for his variations, his records that he's got now.
And he catches pigeons.
He's robbed Jade Dernbach of that one day 2020 record, by the way.
Jade Dernbach was an absolute phantom. I don't know how he ever got his... He had that deceptive ball out the back of the hand that even when they show a replay, I still kind of pick on TV. But apart from that, he went the distance, didn't he? Playing international cricket?
Yeah.
Yeah, but because he had that deceptive ball out the back of the hand that you can't pick on TV, he was also quite good, Jim.
Mega bucks, Andy. Didn't see me getting picked in the IPL draft.
I tell you who I think he's been hard done to, and he's been out of the picture for a long, long time. It's David Willey.
I think he's better than Sam Curran. I think if you're looking for that left arm, which they obviously want, obviously, he obviously wants a bit of variation in the bowling attack. I think David Willey's a better bet than Sam Curran, personally.
Right, that wasn't the point I was making, Jimmy. I think he's been hard done to, but I'd like to hear you now justify why he is better than Sam Curran.
I don't really get Sam Curran. I don't get either of the Currans. I sat and watched Sam Curran in the second last over today. Basically, turned to Rassie van der Dussen and was it Du Plessis who was still in at the end? And just say, yeah. Where do you want this one saved up, lads? And I couldn't really see what his game plan was. Okay, he bowls a nice slow ball. So does Rhys Topley. He's left arm, I give him a game. Doesn't bat as well as Sam Curran.
Rhys Topley once got hit in the head by KP. Rhys Topley once got hit in the head by KP as a net bowler.
I was going to say, I didn't know KP could get it up with his spin that high.
So, Jimmy, if I ask you for your 11, I'm assuming Sam Curran hasn't quite made the cut.
I just haven't really, neither of the Currans made the cut in mine. I'm a little bit like Andy. I've not really got an 11. I've got a list of players, take them or leave them. And I think the only certainties that you've got in the bowling department are Archer, Rashid and Jordan. I'm not sold on either of the Currens. I think I don't see why there shouldn't be a route back in for someone like David Willey. You wonder, is there, if you're in India, you probably need another spinner. Where do they go there? Is there a young spinner coming through? Parkinson? Didn't really see enough of him when they played New Zealand. He didn't do anything against Australia.
Is that Root's avenue back in?
Could you pack Root at six and almost have him? But if needs be at the end of an innings, you don't want Root coming in having to score you quick runs.
No, then you just put Jofra Archer up.
You're not going to put Jofra Archer ahead of Root. It doesn't matter what the game situation is. That's like when you're David James up front in need of a goal with a striker on the bench. You don't do it.
Yeah, no. He's the best player of spin in England. He's a spinner himself. And he did score some runs when he plays in the Blast when he finally decided to play 2020 cricket.
He performed at the 2016 T20 World Cup. He got runs in the final against West Indies when Jason Roy got the second bowler and no one else really performed. He stood up then, to be fair. I think if you're going to say anything from Root's defence, he's a big-time player. Big-time player, big-game player. That's the one. I just don't think... You do question him batting at six. I think his spin's a bit different. I think it would be quite difficult to play out there. I say out there. I only found out where the tournament was being held 10 minutes ago.
I think Roy plays that first game and I think Bairstow bats slower down.
I think we'll go in it with one spin.
I think that's what they'll
do. Probably play one current, if not both.
I think they'll play both and I think it'll be one spinner and they'll rely on their variations.
I think the team that we've played for this is pretty much what we'll go with. I think they'll just back that Jason Roy will get into some form over the Big Bash and over the 100 next year.
Could you see them going with Wood and almost saying Wood and Archer, let's have two bowlers bowling 90 mile an hour up there?
Not 2020.
Maybe not. I think it'll depend on what pitches, because India are producing quicker bowlers, aren't they now? And it's not like it's going to be rag and square in a 2020. So I think it'll just depend on the pitches. They both did well against Australia. I think if you're not going to pick Wood in South Africa, then the likelihood is you're not going to pick him in India.
Skinny bowler. Though.
Just as one final. Different.
He's not like an archer who's going to run in and hit the pitch. He will hit the pitch, obviously, but you know. He's just a bit skinny. It's something different.
But just as one final comment on Wood, he's not going to reverse it after 20 overs, is he? So you're missing that aspect too, which is such a big part of his repertoire that he can offer, is the late movements the other way.
So. He goes in the squad, doesn't he? He'll probably get a couple of games here and there when it is a slightly game. I just don't think, well, for me, he does get in my first team. I don't think England will pick him in their first 11, though.
And they'll love him for his morale, and he'll write some great blogs for the BBC Sport while he's out there.
Do you think he gets paid for it?
Yeah. One thing that I would just like to ask, the last time, obviously, they won the World Cup in 2019. Before that, the only ever major trophy that they'd won was that 2010 T20 out in the West Indies when they won it. The team, let's go with the team that played today, this afternoon. Does that team today beat the team that won the World Cup? So just to go through that, the final team, the only previous team prior to 2019, that England team that had won a major trophy, was Kiesewetter, who left his ball in his stumps in the final once he got to 63 and secured man of the match. Done his job. Lum, KP, Collingwood, Morgan was there. Luke Wright, who's still scoring runs and was being the top scorer of the last decade of domestic 2020 in England. Tim Bresnan, Michael Yardy, Graham Swan, who Rashid's only just overtaken his wicket tally, and I think Swan got them quicker. Stuart Broad, just being nominated for sports personality, and Ryan Sidebottom, a left armer for
every team. Look, all that proves is every winning team has a left armer. Just something different. Bit of a maverick on and off the pitch. I think it's a good debate. I think when you look at, is it harsh to say they were carried by KP and Swan? Like, no offense to them. I know they've had decent careers, but I'm not exactly sold on. Yeah, Luke Wright was all right. I'm not exactly sold on Lum and Yardy.
So Lum, only not that long ago, was still playing in the Big Bash.
Not sold on him. I've committed to it. I'm going to have to see it through.
I think it's interesting. I think Kiesvetter would not be far off still playing international cricket, certainly top level county cricket, were it not for his accident with the with his eye. Lum, as we say, was playing top level domestic cricket globally recently. KP is obviously retired. He's happy, but could have been playing still. Collingwood's finished. Morgan's still playing. Luke Wright's still up there. Bresnan's finished. Yardie's finished. Swan finished. Can't hold a ball anymore. Broad in white ball cricket.
Go on, say it.
And side bottom.
He's not finish.
He's no finish. Broad and side bottom probably got away with bowling and playing in the early years of T20 cricket. I think now, batters would.
I think the difference of the years, I think if that makes sense of how 2020 cricket's played, I think the current England team would beat the England team that won the World Cup in 2010. I think that I don't think they'd hammer
five match series. It's 4-1.
Yeah, I don't think they'd hammer them every game. I think they'd be decent games, but I think it would be like you said, 4-1 in a five match series.
Yeah,
I don't know how it would go.
Well, it'll be interesting to see not only who they pick, but obviously how they perform. That is one that we can keep an eye on. We'll come back and check in on in a year's time.
All right, I think we've covered that in pretty much enough depth. Like you said, Doiger, we'll come back in a few months' time, and obviously, hopefully, still doing this next year. We'll see what our predictions were like and see what team they pick. So, over to you, Doiger. What's next?
So, I saw the headlines through the week alongside the viral video of the Spurs boys in the dressing room. The headline was "Fancy a net? Ben Stokes and Stuart Broad react as sports stars enjoy cricket match." So without purposely having a cricket link, there is a little bit of one there. And obviously that got me thinking. The clip was them. It was the boys playing in the dressing room. The quick cricket set was out. A bit of a wind down from training. Mourinho has obviously given them 5 minutes. Let them have a go at the rule. And the one that caught my eye in particular was it wasn't necessarily Harry Kane. He can stick to scoring goals. But Joe Hart, obviously spending a lot of time on the bench at the minute, he's probably got time to take them up on that offer for the net. And he's also a pretty handy cricketer by all accounts. Not only did he have a nice action, a left armer for you, Jimmy.
Well, Andy, I was going to say, if he gets in the net, you never know. You still rule him
out. He is our mystery 11. But he looked like a handy cricketer. He plays a lot of cricket. He's a Shrewsbury boy. And I think not only does he invest a little bit of money into Shrewsbury, across there in their league, the cricket club, I think he actually still rolls out for them through the summer every now and again. So the headline itself was a bit of a laugh, a bit of a viral video. It was very good to see some Spurs players with a smile on themselves. But also it got me thinking a little bit about sports stars who not only have played and mastered and been professional in one sport, but who's been a professional in two sports and become a cross sports star. So there were a couple that caught my eye through the first lockdown. Most people, I actually didn't, but I do know the story a little bit from hearing everyone bang on about it, was The Last Dance and Michael Jordan. He obviously was a basketball player, the greatest ever for many people. And then he signed a professional contract to play minor league baseball with the Chicago White Sox. So he was a dual professional athlete. The other one that made me laugh when I remembered it was Usain Bolt and his athletics. And then he went and played some football down in Australia and South Africa, I think, may even have been over in Denmark. And he's got dreams of playing for Man U, although they seem to have a couple of strikers at the minute. And then Conor McGregor was one of my other ones with his MMA and boxing crossover. So there's loads of people that are across there. Christian Ways went across to the NFL from rugby. Lawrence Okoye was the GB gymnast, discus thrower. He'd make a very good gymnast, so he's massive. But he went across the NFL as well with a bit of a rugby background. And there's a lot of people who are pretty handy in other sports. So I guess my conversation is potentially who would make the best crossover sports star. And I'm going to start us off, and I don't mean to throw anyone under a bus, but Andy Reid, God bless him, rugby, prop, get him in.
Andy Reid, the fat lad who used to play for Sunderland.
I was being nice calling him a prop, Jimmy. No, Andy Reid. No, there's a few people that could probably make it.
Sorry, Andy Reid, the prop forward. Christ on a bike, could you imagine?
Yeah, some people with certain attributes. Peter Crouch, could he be a basketball player? Almiron, could he be a sprinter?
Well,
Get lost.
You kind of mentioned some professionals that have done it in quite a big way. When I think about a couple of people, Andrew Flintoff went and was a professional boxer for a fight. Not saying he was great, but he certainly crossed over and did it.
He's 1-0. He's got the same record as KSI.
Yeah,
God bless the tryer.
And wasn't it Petr Cech? Was he played professional ice hockey as well? Wasn't he a professional ice hockey player? Didn't he sign a professional contract once he wrapped in? Obviously, before he then come back out of retirement and is now in Chelsea squad. But it is just interesting, really. Like you said, of who would be. Andy Reid, obviously, is quite a nice one. I was thinking darts, but for Andy Reid, but never mind.
very good.
Just a thought. But you're right. I mean, it's interesting when you think about Usain Bolt. He was determined. You watched him in the soccer aid game, I think, and he actually looked all right. But then you have to remember he's playing against pros who were out the game for a while, or other celebrities who weren't proper centre-halves. It is a slightly different. Ian Botham obviously played football and cricket. So there is a couple. Who else do you think would be, I suppose?
Well, the Neville brothers, it's funny you mentioned Flintoff. I've got a bit of a note to mention. The Neville brothers were supposedly quality, shit-hot cricketers and then chose correctly football and go and get the payday there. But I'm sure Freddie Flintoff has described Neville, I think it was Phil Neville, as claiming he's put genius on him. He's called him a cricketing genius at one point. So if Flintoff recognises your talent...
To be fair, then you're saying that Neville's chose right. I think Gary chose correctly. Neville, Phil, you never know. What could have been?
He was the Lionesses manager, Jimmy.
I'm no doubt in his career as a manager. I'm just looking at the fact he couldn't hold down a regular position for either Man United or Everton. Was he a right back? Was he a centre mid? Was he a centre back?
The best one that I remember from when I was younger... And I always hoped it would happen again, and it hasn't happened again. And I looked into the story a little bit. But it was in 2003, and there was the Rugby World Cup and the Cricket World Cup happened in the same year. And by some twist of fate, Namibia, the small African, tiny country, had qualified for both of them. And normally their good players either turn South African or they travel, they become a different nationality so they can get top-level international sport. They travelled. To the qualifiers, they qualified for both World Cups, and Rudy van Vuren played for Namibia at both the Rugby and the Cricket World Cup in the same year.
That is amazing achievement, but could you be arsed?
Well, it depends.
Could you imagine playing 80 minutes and getting 12 shades of shit kicked out of you in a rugby game to all of a sudden have to go and bat against Brett Lee on a very fancy Perth pitch?
Absolutely. Well, I reckon... If you're a winger for Namibia, chances are you're not going to get the ball. I don't think he was. I think he was in the thick of it. But go with it. Winger for Namibia, you're not getting the ball. You don't have to do very much at the Rugby World Cup. You've ticked the rugby box. If you then be a little thanks for coming, bat eight, don't bowl, Cricket World Cup, it doesn't matter what your batting stats are at eight. If you're Namibia, you're getting rolled for 70 each game. You just kick them over, Jimmy. You don't have to try and grind it out.
I also think he's the first guest we'll need to get on the show because by the sounds of it, Jimmy wants to have a chat with him and ask him what his payday was.
What were you thinking? What was going through your head? Namibian Sports Personality of the Year secured.
For 10 years running.
You'd be going down as an absolute sporting legend. Honestly, what's the thought process behind this? Like Scott Parker winning the Intertoto Cup at Newcastle. You're a club legend, call it a day.
There's one that's not necessarily turning pro, but it is definitely mastering another sport. And I think there's certainly a lot of people that could probably fall into this category and probably use golf as the sport. But Steph Curry, obviously the basketball player over at Golden State, he is a plus one golfer, and he played in one of these televised charity The Match the other day, where he was his team's professional, and on the other team was Phil Mickelson.
Could you imagine the disappointment getting there and finding out you've got a pro basketballer as your pro golfer?
Who's that work against more? Who would you rather be in that situation? The pro basketballer who's got nothing to lose, or the pro golfer who's got absolutely everything to lose?
I couldn't play 18 holes with Phil Mickelson. Damn. Whether he's on my team or not, I think he looks an absolute space cadet. He just is absolutely mental. He doesn't stop talking.
From one space cadet to another, I've not got a problem with that. I think me and Phil will get along really well.
Jimmy, as your golf partner, if you can replace me with Phil Mickelson, he's welcome to you. No, there's a couple that caught my eye.
I still don't think we get many wins in the box.
There's a couple that caught my eye. There was actually a headline that I saw over the weekend, over the Thanksgiving in America, the Thanksgiving weekend. And it was a college football, so it's not professional sport. And it was actually a female called Sarah Fuller, who is a college student at Vanderbilt University in America. And she is a female college soccer player who, because their soccer league had finished, she was playing for the men's in the Division One college football team as their kicker. She was their professional kicker, their allocated kicker. So she took the kickoffs, and I think she is on the roster to potentially be their kicker for any field goals. Now, Vanderbilt got zeroed. They got nulled, so she didn't have to do anything other than kickoff. But that would be quite interesting to see how potentially she could do, because there's also a lot of talk potentially about rugby players going and doing that. Could Johnny Wilkinson have gone and made more money at the back end of his career as a rugby kicker, only having to walk on, kick a ball and walk off again and get paid millions of dollars to do it?
Literally only in America could you get away with that.
Some gig that.
There's a lot of players in the Premiership that walk on a pitch, kick a ball and walk off it, Jimmy, that get paid millions of pounds over here, and not many of them are worthy of that either. So
Jeff Hendrick, eat your heart out.
Arguably then, if Conor McGregor had won his boxing fight, would he then be number one? Would that at that point, or was it the point that it wasn't at his peak would that have still stuck, or would McGregor then just be number one? He is the greatest athlete at the minute, because he's gone from number one, took over the best pound-for-pound boxer.
It's schoolboy rules, isn't it? Because McGregor was going into that as 49-0 or whatever he was. McGregor beats him. McGregor gets that record. He's all of a sudden 49-0. He's 50-0. And schoolboy rules, he's the best ever. It's likewise South Africa. They're not playing rugby. They won the Rugby World Cup. Don't want to play anyone. Pull out of the Rugby Championship. Play against the Lions. The Lions aren't a test nation, so they can't take the number one World Cup off them. They're going to be 2 years unbeaten in test match rugby. Therefore, they're not beaten. Therefore, they're still number one. It's schoolboy rules, and it is understandable. So yeah, absolutely, he'd have been number one.
Right. Yeah.
He'd have also been the wealthiest man on the planet if he'd done that.
Have you seen? Have you seen the pictures he put out? Just slight go off the pictures he's put out of him and his son in the gym in the last week. And his son is already braying some other little young'un on the decks. And Connor's literally stood there smiling as if he's like, "Yep, he's going to be a fighter," and he's just got no mercy for him, getting him in, arm locks and everything.
Got a lot of time for that.
Yeah, you're wasting your time
if you're going to school, son. You're going one route. And at the very worst case, if you don't make it as a sports star, I think you're going to have enough money coming in from Conor McGregor as your father to have a bit of a background to you. Wasting your time.
Just slightly going back to what you were about with the female, the other female sports star I can think of is Elise Perry, played professional soccer in Australia. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. The soccer over there is starting to be on the rise, and I think if she hadn't have been such a superstar with the cricket, she probably, looking at the athlete she is, would probably be just as good at that as if she is at cricket. Obviously, cricket over there is slightly bigger than soccer is. So But by all means, I'm pretty sure it should be fairly handy.
Well, she could well have been one of these big signings that have been coming across the Women's Super League over here. As you say, making money from it. She's a superstar. She's an incredible athlete on the cricket field. She wasn't a professional footballer, so why wouldn't she have come across?
Coming on to your point earlier, athletes looking like they would fit into another sport. I just can't get the image of maybe Gerwyn Price fighting The Undertaker or Brock Lesnar out of my head.
Well, Gerwyn Price was a professional rugby player, professional darts player.
There you go.
I didn't know that. Great reason.
Gerwyn Price in the WWE would not look one sort of stitch out of place.
Tyson Fury, WWE, professional boxer.
Tyson Fury, oh my days. Brock Lesnar, WWE, UFC.
You're rolling with them now, Jimmy. You're a natural at this.
Honestly.
The only other ones that I had were slightly tenuous. But one of them was Jason Robinson going from rugby league to rugby union, which in theory are change of sports. And a lot of people have done that. When you look at the Burgesses, you look at Luther Burrell, who's just come back the other way most recently. But also because of his story, he's the only male English rugby player to score a final, a try in the Rugby World Cup final. And he was also the first black England rugby captain. So his story carries quite a lot of weight, as well as being a cross-code star. And the other one alongside that is Johnny Williams, who was starting at centre for Wales the other day, having defeated testicular cancer a couple of years ago when he was a Falcon. But he had also been capped by England, I think in a non-capped game, but played international rugby for England in a game against the Barbars at Twickenham. So he's managed to play international sport for two countries, as one or two people have managed to do. So it's not quite cross-sport, but it's representing two different countries at the top level, which was quite interesting just to have a little look about as we went through there.
Did you get any other names of players who had done that? I'm trying to think now off the top of my head, but I can't. The only one that keeps coming to mind...
Roberto Carlos looked into it for a long time.
Who did?
Roberto Carlos, he looked into it for a long time. There's a lot of players that have played sort of 21s for a country and then played professional football for the international when they've been fully capped somewhere else.
Declan Rice has done it, hasn't he? I forgot about
him. Yeah.
Jack Grealish played age groups all the way up through Ireland, and then when he realised he was a half-decent player, switched over to England. Canny kid.
Yeah.
My favourite one, which he's obviously not done yet, but I would love to see it happen, is that tedious link that Erling Haaland was born in Leeds. I'd love to see him pull the England shirt on.
All Leeds, aren't we? We are all Leeds, aren't we? Coaching-wise, my final one that I came across was Clive Woodward, again related to that 2003 Rugby World Cup.
Did he then coach Namibia in the Cricket World Cup?
No, but obviously he was out there. He was playing in the Rugby World Cup, our Namibian pal, Rudy van Vuren. Jason Robinson was scoring in the final, and Clive Woodward was coaching England to win the final. But then he came across and he was performance director at Southampton Football Club for a while.
Sure.
And he tried to put his one percenters mentality into Southampton around the time where their academy was producing all those players of Walcott, Bale and the like.
Surely not.
True.
That is incredible.
True, Jimmy.
You've just mentioned Bale as well, who probably was fairly close to going to be a golfer before Spurs signed him back.
I think his golfing career has taken off since Madrid signed him, in all honesty. I think he's going to do pre-football.
Well, it's Wales, golf, Madrid in that order.
In that order. Tell you what.
I think I saw something earlier on social media that Bale, I don't know if you've seen Bale's house, but the photos of it, he's got a fair bit of land, as you can imagine, in Wales, and he's got a nice little lake with a green on the other side and a nice little fairway type section, and he's actually going to add a fourth floor onto his house, which is essentially the roof, and it's just going to be a big putting green that he's going to have on there. So he's obviously thinking, I'm going to stay in Tottenham for a while. He's obviously got no plans on heading back, and no doubt that we'll see him play a professional golfer, I imagine.
Well, Stephen Warnock, when he used to do his pre-season trips away, he used to took whatever team he had down to his house in Cornwall, and they had a nine-hole golf course around his house. So while he was applying the Sudocreme, they were out on the golf course chipping and putting away.
Nice. It's a nice thought.
Lots of people can be cross sports stars. Jimmy, if you weren't a cricketer, you'd obviously be a professional footballer if it wasn't for that knee injury.
The knee injury, the thigh injury, the ankle injury.
The fact that I'm pretty pony as well sort of steps into the matter. I don't want to draw on what could have been. I'd rather look at what is. I'd say out of the three of us, I've certainly got the strongest weak foot.
There are six weak feet, you are correct.
I scored a penalty at St. James's Park after tripping myself up. Not a dive, but just tripped myself up. The referee bought it, made us take us. This is a good one that someone reminded me the other day. Current championship top goal scorer, Adam Armstrong. I played a game against him when I was in year seven when he was at Warbottle High School. I opened the scoring in that game. Made it 1-0 after about 12 minutes. Very good goal at the back post. Adam Armstrong had scored 5 before halftime. We eventually lost 5-1.
It's like my old PE teacher at school. He wasn't bitter or anything like that, but he used to say he could have played professional football when he was on the academy at Middlesbrough. And in a game for the academy for Middlesbrough, he scored a hat-trick and walked off the pitch delighted as anything, only to lose the game 4-3 because Alan Smith had scored all 4 for Leeds. One of them had a very successful career. One of them taught me PE, so fair play.
I love it.
But without speaking about what ifs, Jimmy, what's next?
Oh, well, I didn't really know where to go with the headline. I was finding this one a little bit hard to jump into because I'm not very good at doing any research. But the minimum amount of research I did do, I decided off the back of Jurgen Klopp's outburst, I wanted to have a look at some of the best sporting excuses from someone who loves a sporting excuse himself, whether it's a drop catch or the reason for turning up late or the fact I've left another ball on my off pole, thinking that the off spinner that never turns it was eventually going to turn one after 4 years of batting against him. I'm never to blame. That's my firm responsibility and view on a sport and how it takes. So, the Jurgen Klopp interview is the main one that caught my headline. I'm going to be honest, I've not got a headline for you. You'll be able to find one if you type Jurgen Klopp into Google. I'm sure something will pop up for the viewers out there.
I'm happy not to talk about Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool again, to be honest, Jimmy.
Perfect. Right, well, we're not going into that. So, I've done a bit of research, very minimal. Sorry, I picked out the first 4 articles that I came across online. Unfortunately, one of them was from a newspaper that we don't want to discuss, so I had to discard that one immediately. I've come up with some of the finest sporting excuses that's been out there, and I'm going to open it up to the floor with one of my favourite ones, one of the sort of more common ones that was definitely shown around the world. Luis Suarez, when he bit Chiellini in the 2014 World Cup, and he claimed he'd lost his balance and fell onto Chiellini. Very loose.
Because all those injuries that people have when they put their hand out to break a fall, they should have just put their teeth out.
Yeah, just use your teeth. I mean, I've had it after a couple of drinks when you've stacked it. Just one of those. Sometimes you just don't know where you are. It's just easier to use someone to cushion your fall, I guess.
Like when you pushed me in that bush that time outside the time bar.
I do not remember that one. Doesn't ring a bell with me. Doesn't sound like something I'd do anyway. But I mean, there's plenty across all sports. I mean, just for example here, I've got a couple of ones which I think are certainly based on failures. I mean, my personal favourite one is David Haye's broken toe versus Klitschko. You've just been battered for 12 rounds. He's just repeatedly punched you in the face over and over again. But no, the reason for your defeat was that broken toe, David. You keep presenting that one. I'm sure someone will believe it if he's said enough.
There's been a lot of brilliant ones in boxing. Obviously, Wilder was blaming his heavy suit that was 40 pounds and tied him out in his ring walk.
Exactly.
Fury, when he got done for his drugs test, and he said it was the castrated, contaminated ball that had failed his drug test and not him taking anything. There's been some good ones in the darts. There was one that I saw, not in the darts, sorry, in the boxing. There was one, Sakio Bika, after he'd lost to Lucien Bute. He said that his excuse for his losing, before the fight, I was very sick and I almost drowned in the hotel pool. I never learned to swim. And so I wanted to cool down after training and I didn't know there was such thing as a deep end in a pool. So I jumped straight in and couldn't stay afloat.
I mean, it's so stupid. You just, it's one of those you think, nah, can't be, surely not. But Oh, that is... You lost words. Jenny, listen to me now. It's so stupid. It's probably actually the case. Sports
are... What other ones, Jimmy? What other ones were good?
Another sort of very famous one is Alex Ferguson's half-time kit change away at Southampton in 1996 when he said Man United players weren't used to playing in the grey kit. They couldn't see the players that they were passing to, so he had them swap into their blue third-choice kit at half-time, 3-0 down. I believe they lost the game 6-2 anyway, so it didn't exactly pan out any better from there, but...
I can't see.
just some absolute belters. Richard Gasquet, who is a tennis player, said that he failed a drugs test for testing positive for cocaine, denied he'd ever taken the cocaine, but said he had kissed a girl who must have taken it.
He got away with that one. That one washed.
I don't believe it did. There's no way that can wash.
Promise you. Promise you got away with it.
The one I found, Jimmy, which I found quite funny, was Ronnie O'Sullivan in 1997. I'm not sure if you saw that one. The Masters final when he was leading 8-3 against Steve Davies. And then there was a female streaker that shocked him and he lost his concentration. And Davies didn't quite because he won the next seven frames and won the final. But the photo that is alongside it is quite funny because Ronnie O'Sullivan looks like he's just staring straight at her. So probably that was the reason, to be fair.
I mean,
I would like to get to a level of sport that I could blame a streaker at, whereas unfortunately the level of sport I play, if there's a streaker, someone's going to need to go and put the grandma back in the home, I think.
Well, part of the view that I wanted to take for doing the excuses was to see if I could come across any that I could then adapt into my line of sports. I think the same old the sun was reflecting off someone's car screen behind the bowler's arm is starting to get a little bit tedious now and people are starting to catch on with how many times am I going to be dismissed on a cloudy day and is that going to be my excuse in a cricket season? Another one, not actually individually related, was the former Fulham owner said that Fulham's relegation a couple of seasons ago was due to the new owner removing the famous Michael Jackson statue outside the ground.
Yeah.
And, I mean, anything like that has got to wash. That is absolutely fair enough. Because the reasoning for defeat on the pitch is a lucky statue that's got absolutely no connection to this club, the sport, sitting outside the ground.
Mourinho blamed poor ball boys for his poor Man U home form at one point. That was quite impressive.
But then did you see, I don't know if you've seen the Tottenham documentary of when the ball boy gets the ball straight back in the play for him. But the first thing he does...
And he gave him the assist.
The lads, just brings him in and he has lunch with the lads and he meets Harry Kane and stuff like that. So, a big thing for him, he gets some training.
Something he looks for in the club. Not how much can I get paid, how good are your ball boys?
How good are the ball boys? He'll be missing them. I mean, they say that he hasn't got any this year and they're flying, aren't they? So,
yeah, but balls are just left all over the place, aren't they, nowadays? It's basically hockey. There's two that caught my eye, just to my last ones. Mike Perry, the UFC fighter, lost last weekend, and he blamed the wrong walk-on song as getting it wrong. So as he walked out, he is a UFC fighter. He's trying to rev himself up to punch someone in the face, and they played Beyonce Halo as he walked out. He blamed it on that. Nothing to do with the fact that he missed weight or that the only person in his corner wasn't a coach or a medic. It was a heavily pregnant girlfriend. But he blamed it on the walk-on song. And I think, hands down, the best excuse I have seen that you might have seen a couple of years ago, Wesley Harms, the darts player at the Grand Slam of Darts, lost 10-2 to Gary Anderson. And he accused him of farting his way through the match, making smells that he couldn't concentrate through.
Well, that's actually a running theme that I think is sort of popping up throughout sport in a way. Because one of the ones that I found was, believe it or not, Zambian tennis star, Leighton and... Oh, I can't even say that name. A Zambian tennis star who lost to... A Zambian tennis star lost a tennis match to an opponent whose name I also cannot say. He basically said, name is it, is a stupid man and a hopeless player. He has a huge nose and is cross-eyed. Girls hate him.
He beat me because my jock strap was too tight and because when he serves, he farts. And that made me lose my concentration, which for which I'm famous throughout Zambia. Absolutely golden. That's not even one excuse. He's just gone after an opponent and thrown anything at the wall, hoping that something will stick. And I will buy it all day long. I'm not having it. Girls think it's ugly, and that's why he lost.
I think the important thing is that it is never, ever your fault. And you should never say sorry, Jimmy.
Never say sorry. Rule number one. No one cares. If you've made a mistake, if I've given the ball away and sent it midfield and they've ran through and scored, the goalkeeper doesn't want me to turn around and say sorry. Just hold your hat. Aye, sorry. I'll do it again.
Any other excuses, Jimmy?
Just want to finish on, I think, a fantastic bit of honesty. NFL star Ricky Williams. And the headline just says, Ricky Williams blames Potch for his failed drugs test. And then he's got a quote, and the quote just reads, I got high and forgot I wasn't supposed to get high. Slightly off topic, but absolutely glorious. I thought that was fantastic just to listen to. Beautiful bit of honesty at the end. Yeah, you know what? I hold my hands up. I did it. I wasn't meant to do it. That's the reason I did it, though. Sorry, lads.
Great honesty. Fair enough. Tinners, anything to add on?
Not for excuses. The kind of the sorry section of apologising brought on. I'm not sure if you saw the David Luiz, Raul Jimenez kind of incident in the game the other night. And the reason I go about sorry is because there's a clip of David Luiz trying to apologise to Raul Jimenez. It was just off topic from what we spoke about the whole time. I read the day that Jimenez has got a fractured skull, so obviously, hopefully, he gets back to full bill of health quickly.
Do you think he'll ever play again?
Well, he might have to play with the Czech helmet. But the chances are he's quite a big centre forward, isn't he? He uses his head a lot.
I was going to say, can you head a ball with one of those on?
Probably not. Can you play at the top level or at any level without that? I'm not sure. I suppose what was brought to my attention today was the way David Luiz attacked the ball. Was it reckless? And would it have happened if he hadn't have attacked it the way he did? Was that kind of something that everyone, obviously it was a freak accident, but it was mentioned today in a certain group chat by a certain person who, is it a case of, was it the way he did it? And obviously he's sorry, and David Luiz is a bit of a maverick like that, to do something a bit mad, sprinting the way he did it to clean him out. I mean, the noise of it, especially with an empty stadium, was pretty disturbing in the way Jimenez just kind of was cleaned out instantly. Glad that he's kind of woke up, I suppose, and he's in hospital and getting the care he needs. But, like I say, will he play football again? Probably not.
What's the pay? Because the other, obviously, horrific incident from the weekend was Grosjean in the Grand Prix with the fire, which, amazingly, it's stunning footage that he walks away from the fires and the car's in too. And it's absolute man-out flame scenes. But will he race again? Will Jimenez play football again? What's the payout if those boys don't? Able to compete in their sport again.
You imagine these days, I suppose, the insurance on the F1, the kind of driver is going to be fairly big, I imagine. The footballers itself, I mean, can you account for that when you sign a contract? You probably do, because I suppose you could break a leg and that could be it. You could snap something and that could be it at whatever age. I mean,
him, but is it, is it paying him up what's left on his contract, and then all of a sudden he's got to take the early injury thing like Julio Arca took, and that's why he was at Shields for so long, and
they'd have to pay him out of his injury. Because obviously they'd in essence have to pay him out of his contract that he signed. The one thing that I think you could look at and say it's then down to the club almost to say, do they take responsibility for it and look after him? A little bit like James Taylor with England. His heart condition, he's obviously gone into a selective role with England. Do you think Wolves will turn around and give him the coaching role? I mean, God forbid that comes to it. You want him to play again. But, I mean, then look at someone like Ryan Mason, who he's now a coach at Tottenham. He does a bit of punditry on the side for Sky. He's found himself a career, and there's a club in there that have thankfully come around to help him out in difficult times. But you hope it doesn't come to that. But if it does, I'm sure there'll be a link in there somewhere, whether it's back to Benfica, where he played before Wolves, if it's back somewhere in Mexico, or you'll pick up work somewhere, you'd imagine.
I think the positive thing for them both is that both it's happened on a fairly large scale event, if that makes sense. They're both on big contracts, I imagine, which means that you think if this was in non-league football or if this was in a smaller kind of venue, where does that go for that player? Obviously, he's woke up. I saw a quote of him saying he's comfortable today, but it's a case of, like you say, Ryan Mason. Obviously, we don't know how bad it is, but a similar thing. And can he play at the highest level again? Who knows? I suppose Ryan Mason thought he was going to, and then it ended up that he couldn't.
You might get bailed.
It's so insensitive, Jimmy.
We went a bit too serious for a second, lads.
The photo,
I said it. It's out there now. Deal with it.
The photo I saw of the F1 driver in hospital. I mean, his hands are all bandaged up. It's a case of he's fitting well.
He looks in good spirits. Yeah,
but it's a case of kind of needs his hands, and if how long is that going to take to recover to a full point, and is he going to have all the sensitivity in his hands that he did have, and how much is that going to affect him, to what level he can then race at? I imagine the contracts they signed is a fairly dangerous contract, so I assume he'll be okay and everything will be fine. But it's a case of, like I said, does he then get stuck? Does he stick with his team? Does his team give him a role for a long period until they get him back, or obviously if he does get back?
The thing these sports stars is that we sit here and we talk about I sort of said it earlier about them needing work. I don't think they need work. They'll have enough money. I think it's more that boredom that they'll probably be sat and they go from competing at a high level, training day in, day out, gym work around the track if you're Grosjean, the F1 driver, you know, sort of stuff that keeps them busy day in, day out, and all of a sudden not having that anymore. I think that's the one thing that they need to fill their time, and obviously just something to do. I think all of a sudden going from having that top-level competitive nature to then just being sat doing nothing would be the hardest thing.
And especially at both of their ages, neither of them are anywhere near expecting to wind down.
How old is Grosjean?
I'm just assuming that he's a decent enough age that he's racing at the highest level, and there's no rumours of, well, it was his final year anyway, so it's fine. It's a case of, well, they're both at their highest level. You can always drop down levels as you get older. Yeah. Jimenez is always linked with a bigger move away to a bigger club. Man United are always linked with him. Do you know what I mean? He's at that level with Wolves that it's either stick or twist. And I suppose now, hopefully, he'll come back and be at Wolves for a long period of time and he'll play. But I think it's one of those things that if it was slightly older, slightly later on the career, it might be not as bad, I suppose.
Right, well, we do an awful lot of obviously looking back on the week and discussing a couple of headlines. So I thought this week, just to finish, rather than looking at a headline, we look forward and we have a look at one or two of the sporting events that come up in the future. So each week we'll pick a fixture, an event, and we'll try and have some sort of prediction each, and then we'll be able to have a check-in as we go and see who's closest, who's most correct, who's most accurate. So this week I thought, why don't we go the biggest fixture of the weekends, obviously now that Newcastle have been pulled by COVID, touch wood this one won't.
There's another North excuse, London. By the way. How have we managed to pull that one out? I haven't got a clue.
Jimmy, shut up, man.
Your squad's got the COVID.
The North London derby. Obviously Spurs and Arsenal. 4:30 Sunday afternoon at Spurs. The league table doesn't lie. Tinners, what's your prediction?
Mourinho going to do Arteta 3-0 Tottenham.
3-0. Jimmy?
I've gone 4-1.
4-1. I went closer.
That's going to go. I could see Arsenal having an on day. No, I think Spurs will beat them 4-1. I think the pace on the counter will be too much. As you've said, Arteta hasn't looked the same. I think he's a decent manager still. I just think he hasn't got the squad that he wants.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Spurs will win as well, especially at home. I've gone 2-1. I think they'll stay top of the league at the weekend. But I think there'll be goals, and I think it'll be a decent watch. But
slightly off we'll topic, see. In a longer-term prediction, could you see Spurs winning the league?
No.
Yes.
I'm going to go no. I think Liverpool will still win it this season. But I think it's a nice change. I quite enjoy seeing Mourinho back.
If Liverpool,
I quite like Mourinho. I know there's a lot of people that don't like him and obviously don't like his attitude and stuff, but I think he's funny. I think his personality's funny. He's very... I mean, who in the first day of a job when they meet everyone sits down and goes, I'm the chosen one? Absolute dynamite.
Steven Gerrard could barely shake the kit man's hand on his first day.
No, I agree, Jim. I like Mourinho as much as I probably shouldn't do, but I quite like seeing Spurs up there instead of Man City, because I do think at some point Spurs' squad will give in. I don't think they'll get a couple of injuries, and I think it's not quite up there. But I think come the North London, I think he'll give Bale, Son and Kane, he'll start them three up front, and it'll just be too much. I just think Aubameyang's not firing enough to kind of take control of a North London derby.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Right, boys. Anything else?
Not that I can think of. Nothing for me. Crack.
I have had enough of you for the week, Jimmy. But we'll have a look. We'll have a watch. Keep your eye on the news and stay well.
Go well.
Enjoy, lads. See you later.
Boys.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum, bum, bum.